Case number 12-1365, Blanca Telephone Company et al. Petitioners versus Federal Communications Commission et al. Mr. Welch for the petitioners, Ms. Bergold for the respondents.
Mr. Welch?
Good morning, may it please the court. Petitioners are three very small cellular telephone service providers that provide cellular telephone service in rural areas of the United States to extremely remote areas of the United States. Because they offered more than two handset types to their subscribers, the Commission's rules required that by September 2006, they had to offer hearing aid compatible handsets. When September 2006 came about, petitioners couldn't get the handsets from their vendors, so we filed for a waiver of the rule until such time as the handsets became available to them. Subsequently, it became apparent that very nearly the entire small carrier class as a group couldn't get handsets from vendors.
Do we know that it was very nearly the whole universe of such of that carrier? I know there were a large number of carriers who applied for the waiver, but is it in the record what the fractional relationship is between the number applying for waivers and the number of carriers in that category?
Well, in the record, Your Honor, in our petition for reconsideration, the Commission made its decision. We came in and said, look, there are 88 carriers who filed for waivers or other relief that are for the kind of oddball. So,
but 88 out of how many do we know?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. 88 out of how many?
Two or three carriers?
Well, we don't know, Your Honor.
Right. So the statement that very nearly all two or three carriers asked for waiver is not supported by the record.
Well, it's supported by... Well, first of all, we asked the Commission, if you're going to rely upon the universe of carriers, then you have to tell us how many there are, because we don't know.
The statement that very nearly all of the tier 3 carriers applied for waivers is not supported by the record.
Well, it's in a staff report, Your Honor, which isn't in the record of this particular waiver.
So do you know how many tier 3 carriers there are?
Yes, about 88.
No, that's how many applied for the waiver, right?
No, Your Honor, that's how many carriers who were going to use digital handsets were filing the required reports every half year, I think it was at the time. The carriers had to file reports, we can surmise that those are the carriers in the class, if there weren't any others.
And then of the 88, how many sought waivers? Do we know that?
88 sought relief.
Okay. Also, as far as we know, all of them sought some relief.
All of them sought some relief.
Okay. All tier 3 carriers sought some relief.
All tier 3 carriers that we know about sought relief.
That statement that we know about is the one above it.
Well,
are there other tier 3 carriers out there who did not apply for relief of any sort?
I'm trying to give deference to the Commission's conclusion that there might have been, but I can't state for certain that there wasn't.
Since you can't state for certain that there weren't, we really don't know whether the statement is true that virtually all tier 3 carriers applied for relief.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the statement comes from a staff report?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So, but also from that premise, we can't conclude, the Commission couldn't conclude, and this was our point in our petition for reconsideration, that the great majority of carriers had complied by the deadline, because there's nothing in the record to support that. The only thing the Commission knows is that 88 carriers sought some kind of relief.
Well, and, Mr. Watson, we do know this, don't we, that of the 88 that initially sought relief, all but a few, your clients, managed to cure their problems by the revised deadline of January 1st?
No, Your Honor, that's incorrect.
Okay.
The correct statement would be 34 carriers. The FCC's brief calls them the group of 21 or the group of 22. But if we turn to page 1 of the, and this is just a correction to, if we're going to count, let's get the numbers correct, I guess. In page 1 of the joint appendix, which is a listing of who filed, in section 3A1, there's 21 or 22 filers listed there. And the FCC in its brief refers to the group of 21 or the group of 22.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Some of these filers filed for multiple companies. So the real number that got waivers in Section A is 34 out of 88.
Okay.
And we'll accept out four other ones because they're oddballs. Two, for instance, in 3A4, those are my clients who were filed because they didn't know what the commission's de minimis ruling might be because they offered fewer than three handsets. They just wanted to be safe. So, you know, they filed for relief, but they really didn't need it. And two other ones, I think the commission determined, well, they had the handsets, so they didn't need it. But back to your point, Judge Ginsburg, that as of January 1, 34 were compliant out of, let's say, 84. So 50, including 40 iWireless licensees did not comply until after that date, and then 10 others, including three petitioners before the court. So after the commission was done with its order on reconsideration, 74 had been granted waivers both before and after January 1 compliance, but petitioners were not granted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to direct the court's attention to page 35 of the FCC's brief. And this is the commission stating that the only compliance deadline in this case is the compliance deadline specified in the rule. But the commission also, in this case, determined that it wasn't reasonable to expect anybody to meet that deadline. Except by denying petitioners waivers, they effectively said, but petitioners, you have to meet the deadline that we find nobody could reasonably meet.
But I don't understand. That seems a non sequitur to me. In the very same proceeding, they granted waivers to those who had presented certain evidence of attempts to comply. They didn't say that it was... I don't understand the reason that you just offered.
Oh, yes, Your Honor. Could we turn to paragraph 38, which is on page 19.
In the JA?
Of the joint appendix. And this is describing one of the waiver grants. And this carrier was confused about what handsets to offer.
You say the page again, I'm sorry.
Excuse me. Page 19 of the joint appendix, paragraph 38.
This is the original decision or the...
Yes, the first decision, Your Honor.
Okay.
And this particular petitioner, was confused about what handsets were compliant. And the commission finds, even absent your confusion, additional compliant models were not available to it as of the deadline. Well, they weren't available to anyone or any company because... as evidenced by the fact it received
a... And they granted a lot of waivers where there was also enough evidence of compliance.
Well compliance...
Or attempt to comply.
After the deadline specified in the rule, Your Honor.
Yeah, that's why there was a waiver being sought.
Exactly,
Your Honor. If they had met the deadline specified in the rule, we wouldn't be having this proceeding. I'm just not following
That's
where
correct.
You're coming from on this.
Well, there weren't handsets available, so everybody files for a waiver. And
right.
Then the commission...
Right, bingo. Therefore, we some got waivers when there was sufficient evidence of attempts to comply. Others didn't because they didn't find sufficient evidence. So
Well, but the...
I don't understand your point.
The whole case turns on the notice of the date they use on this side of January 1.
Why does it turn on that? The notice was you were supposed to comply earlier. You failed. Everybody failed. So therefore, there was a waiver. So you don't have to get a notice of when you had to have done this by. This is all nunk-pro-tunk anyway. So there's no notice issue about the date that they're going to then fix. The question is, do they have a reasonable basis for picking that date and for making exceptions to that date?
Yes, Your Honor. The reason they picked the date is they found that a great majority of carriers had complied by that date. But we showed the commission, based upon the record,
That wasn't their only guideline. There were two guidelines. There was the date, getting it done by the time almost everybody else was able to get it done, and having sufficient diligence. And in your case, they said the reason you didn't have sufficient diligence was because you only went back to your own vendors.
I think you made an incorrect statement on your first point. They determined that the great majority had complied by January 1, but the commission was wrong. And we brought that to the commission's attention. And the commission's response was, Mr. Welch, you don't know how many complied. You're excluding the carriers who complied but didn't file. But I anticipated that argument in the petition for reconsideration by telling the commission, if you want to rely upon carriers who aren't filing waivers, you can't presume that they're compliant because they don't file something. You have to check.
What's wrong with their reliance on the fact that your clients looked only to their old vendors, to their existing vendors? Wrong with that?
Well, the policy at the time, dating from 2005 with Singular and T-Mobile waiver requests, the commission instructed the carriers, you are to work with your vendors and then get compliant when you can. And I can't remember if the commission said, here's the do it by this deadline or whatever perspective.
This isn't a waiver. Your original failure isn't a waiver failure. Your original failure was to not be compliant. Is there anything in the original rule that said you only needed to talk to your own vendors in order to get compliant?
No, Your Honor, there was nothing.
So then why did you think it was acceptable to only look to your own vendors when others who got the exception looked beyond their own vendors?
But that's not in the record, Your Honor. There's nothing.
It is in the record that some of the ones who got waivers got it because they looked more broadly.
I'm not sure that that's the case, Your Honor. I couldn't find any finding by the commission which said this waiver applicant gets a waiver because it looked at another vendor.
But when they denied your petition for, I guess it was a reconsideration, when they denied you the relief you sought and said in response to your argument that you were similarly situated to those who were relieved of the penalty, they said, did they not at that point, that you looked only to your traditional vendor, your incumbent vendor, whereas others had looked elsewhere?
They didn't say that second part, Your Honor. They said that we didn't look at other vendors. I don't know that in this order the commission says that it granted waivers based upon these other carriers looking to other vendors. In fact, I make the point in the petition for reconsideration that's exactly what they didn't find. And in the acoustic coupling waiver order, we brought this point up, in that order, dealing with another hearing aid compatibility rule for handsets, the commission said, okay, you have a date in the future in which you must comply, which is perhaps a more routine way of doing things, giving notice of the date in the future you have to comply by, rather than a year and a half after the fact, saying you should have complied a year and a half ago, or a year ago, or whatever time in the past they picked the date was. But I can't see in here, Your Honor, that they found one carrier that utilized different vendors, and that's how they got the grant. If we could look at page 60.
Yeah, that's where I'm looking for something about iWireless. I think it's in paragraph 13, maybe.
Yes, if we could look at page 60. We have the commission's explicitly stating, while it is possible that further attempts or alternative avenues might have led to compliance sooner, which
Where is this on the page?
It's on page 61, right towards the top, in paragraph 13.
Okay.
And while it's possible that further attempts or alternative avenues might have led to compliance sooner, we find the actions by iWireless taken as a whole demonstrate a reasonably diligent effort. So they're actually excluded from the requirement to seek alternative sources. And an interesting point about iWireless is if we go back to page 60.
Well, they had a different problem, right? They were given inaccurate information by a vendor. Isn't that their problem?
Yes, that's the finding here. Yes, Your Honor. iWireless itself is a vendor to the 40 companies under it. So it's, you know, iWireless is a different creature, but in that regard, to some extent.
But so you're saying they nowhere said of some other company, well, they looked to alternative sources, whereas you all did not.
I don't know where that is, Ron, exactly.
Well, I don't know that we all had the same dream, but I certainly thought I saw it.
Well, hopefully.
We'll let the government tell us if it's in here.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I see my time is just about up.
Okay. All right, we'll hear from the government.
Thank you.
While we're on this subject, we've been asked. While we're on this subject, I asked the government to tell us where the findings are.
Go ahead.
I think before you start, Judge Ginsburg would like to
Ms. Burgle, could you pick up where we left off and tell us where the commission said of other carriers that were not penalized ultimately that they had discharged their due diligence obligation by seeking alternative sources?
What the commission found was that there was general industry conditions that made it very difficult for many Tier 3 carriers to become compliant exactly on September 18th. This was because until shortly before the September 18th deadline, only a few equipment models had been certified as compliant with the inductive coupling standards.
We're past that. We're looking back at post-January
given,
1st.
Given these short-term, widespread industry conditions, the commission established an inference that even if a Tier 3 carrier had not complied exactly on September 18th, full compliance by January 1st was an indication of due diligence.
Okay, now a few carriers didn't make it by January 1st, right?
Yes,
okay.
Your Honor.
Some of those are here today. They were penalized. Others were excused because they did do due diligence. It explained that they were able to explain away why they missed the January 1 deadline. Right? They'd been sufficiently diligent even though they missed the January 1 deadline.
You mean the iWireless? The iWireless.
Let's take iWireless.
Companies.
Is that the only example? Okay.
The commission found first that iWireless demonstrated in great detail, and this is shown in their petition for reconsideration, which is in the record, that they had exercised due diligence. They had conducted extensive research into the compliance and availability of many different handset models, and it conducted contacted a wide range of manufacturers and wholesalers, not just the existing suppliers.
Where can we find that?
It's in the petition for reconsideration.
Is it in the commission's opinion on reconsideration?
Yes, okay. It's both in the reconsideration and in the...
Okay, is it at page 60?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it in paragraph 13? Or 12?
Paragraph 12 and 13.
Okay, so what should we focus on there?
What?
What should we focus on in 12 and 13?
As to what their...
Yeah, I see. Here it is. I What's it? Regularly contacted.
iWireless's inventory manager states, in order to identify and procure hearing aid compatible phones, I regularly contacted manufacturers and distributors and asked them for information regarding the availability of compliant handsets, a process that included identifying the authorized distributors for particular manufacturers, obtaining information regarding handset availability from these distributors, and obtaining and attesting handsets for network compatibility. The petition, supported by a sworn declaration and affidavit, documents with timelines iWireless's efforts in connection with 14 handsets. So they had 14 handsets that were potentially compatible with their network. They contacted various manufacturers and distributors, not only their existing suppliers.
Was iWireless the only carrier that was excused for failing to meet the January 1st deadline?
They were the only. South Slope was the other carrier. They were affiliated with iWireless. They were in the same buying consortium, and indeed they incorporated by reference the iWireless petition for reconsideration. Right.
So that's in paragraph 14.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, okay.
So in
14 and 15 on page 61.
So that, and these are the two petitions showed was a model of what the commission expected with due diligence, that unlike petitioners, they surveyed the marketplace, they went to all possible sources.
Did they end up getting a supply earlier than did the petitioners here?
They were earlier than two of the petitioners. There are two particular facts that distinguish them. One is that they received faulty information. iWireless, in its efforts, first purchased equipment from its manufacturer. It purchased the Nokia 64 model on the representation of the manufacturer that it was compliant. That information was faulty. Then iWireless had to go and find alternative equipment, and it found an alternative piece of equipment that was compliant with the inductive coupling rules, but Nokia gave faulty information as to the availability of that second piece of equipment. It was made available several months after the original projections. So there were good reasons why they were unable to comply until March 13th. In addition to all of this, the iWireless companies are GSM carriers, and the commission found that there are very few equipment models that are compatible with the GSM technology. The only petitioner that is a GSM carrier in this case was Farmers, and it became compliant 2 months after the iWireless companies. So the record shows that the grant of the iWireless petition for waiver represented very different circumstances, and iWireless was not similarly situated to the petitioners in this case. All the petitioners did in this case was, as Mr. Welsh has acknowledged, was to contact their existing suppliers for compliant equipment. And when their suppliers could not provide that equipment, the petitioners were content month after month to remain in violation of the rule rather than to seek out alternative sources.
I take it that North Dakota also sought out alternatives.
North Dakota was compliant before January 1st, 2007, and therefore they had the advantage of the inference of due diligence, Your Honor.
Oh, I see. That's right. They corrected their initial
on reconsideration,
the
Your Honor, yeah. The commission yeah. found that they, in fact, had become compliant as yeah. of late December. And the commission reasonably distinguished between those carriers who became compliant in 2006 and the petitioners who didn't become compliant until later because, as I said, there were industry conditions that prevented carriers from becoming compliant, or many carriers sooner. However, by the beginning of 2007, those conditions had in large part dissipated. There were large numbers of carriers that were providing equipment. Equipment was no longer scarce. The shipping delays had abated, and there was no basis in the record to justify granting a waiver, the longer waivers that the petitioners had asked for. The petitioners have made statements regarding the statistics in this case as to how many Tier 3 carriers were compliant as of January 1st. The commission did not make a specific finding on that, but the commission's records show that there were at least 50 Tier 3 carriers that were compliant as of January 1st. The staff report that is cited in the petitioner's reply brief reports that 34 carriers were compliant as of November 17th, 2006. And the order on review and the reconsideration order show that there were an additional 16 carriers that became compliant between November 17th and January 1st. Therefore, there is ample support for the commission's finding that there were large numbers of carriers that were compliant as of January 1st. The petitioners have also incorrectly stated the total number of the Tier 3 carriers. They cite the staff report, which states, and they are correct, that 88 Tier 3 carriers that filed November 2006 compliance, there were 88 that filed November 2006 compliance reports, but not all carriers filed November compliance reports, including the three petitioners in this case.
Do we know how many Tier 3 carriers there are?
Well, the commission knows that there are at least six that did not file reports. So there were at least 94. And
it's been accurate to have said that the vast majority of such carriers sought waiver as counsel said at the beginning, right?
Most of them did.
Yes, we'll do. If that
yes, yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. Most did, not all did. The petitioner said that all of the Tier 3 carriers were not in compliance. That is inconsistent with the findings in the order itself. The commission specifically found that there were two Tier carriers that were, in fact, compliant as of the September 18th deadline, Lyrics and Cellular 29, and that's in paragraphs 50 to 52.
As far as we know, that's the only two that made it, is that correct?
The commission did not make a specific finding as to others, but we can infer that there were approximately 25 that were compliant by the deadline.
By the original deadline?
By the original deadline. The way we can infer that is that the staff report reports 34 were compliant as of the November compliance reports. And the order itself lists 10 carriers that became compliant between September 18th and November 17th. So subtracting the 10 who became compliant, who were non-compliant but became compliant at the time of the November reports from the 34 that were compliant, reported compliant as of November, gives you about 25.
Further questions? All right, thank you very much. Any time remaining for rebuttal?
There is no time remaining for rebuttal.
Okay, we'll give you 2 minutes if you need.
I'd like to draw the court's attention to paragraph 28 in the first order on review, and that's page 16 of the joint appendix. FCC counsel has explained that iWireless, as a GSM carrier, faced particular hardships because the equipment wasn't available as readily as for other types of technology. And in this paragraph, the commission makes a finding. Many GSM carriers were able to comply relatively soon after the compliance deadline. Similar to the other Tier 3 carriers whose petitions we deny, Cellular One Long Lines does not present any unique facts or circumstances to distinguish its situation from those carriers who were able to comply by January 1. In the order on reconsideration, iWireless is accepted out, for as counsel just explained, because handsets weren't available, but there's a finding that they were. And that's the only point I'd like to... Well, I'll make one other point about vendors. My clients relied upon their vendors to do the handset sorting that iWireless went through for its subset. As I mentioned, iWireless is a vendor to its umbrella licensees. My clients relied upon their vendors, as those licensees relied upon iWireless. Okay, we're going to let the person who knows, the company that knows what the handset capabilities are, tell us what they are. So those 40 licensees of iWireless, they didn't do anything. They just relied upon iWireless to make the determination that these handsets are compliant or these handsets aren't. My clients relied upon their vendors. And the vendors weren't telling my clients handsets are available over there, go get them. They were saying, and our waiver requests say, the manufacturers are not making the handsets available. Not that they're not making them available to us as the vendor, they're not available generally, which was the circumstance we had when we filed the waiver request. There weren't any available. Thank you.
All right, we'll take the matter under submission. Thank you.